Hey, Fiends of the Pod. This is your host, film critic, and comedian Nate Wyckoff here, letting you know that we will be running the best of for the next four episodes. These will include some lesser-known episodes, as well as some classic favorites, all picked by not me, but our regular panelists for you to enjoy. Why are we doing this? One, we'd like to give some of our old episodes that we deeply love some new listeners or some revisits from those of you who've been with us for the long haul. And also, it's going to give us a chance to do some housekeeping and launch some brand new things. So I hope you enjoy. And in addition, make sure you go to cultandclassicfilms.com, sign up for our newsletter, and feel free to pick up a movie or subscribe to our Patreon, where you get discounted exclusive cult films sent to you just about every month. All right, enjoy the show, and we look forward to bringing you a brand new episode in a few weeks. Hey, Fiends of the Pod, Nate Wyckoff, your host here again, reminding you, like, subscribe, and yes, it is hard to come up with these extra little special things for every episode, but like my good friend behind me, Godzilla, I will not stop until every single building in a metropolitan area is destroyed, if you don't like and subscribe. Enjoy, and please go to cultandclassicfilms.com to pick up exclusive cult movies. And also, you can subscribe and have them delivered at a discount to your door every single month. Enjoy the show.
Welcome to Cult and Classic.
Welcome, friends and fiends of the pod, to a very special episode of Cult and Classic Films Podcast, the podcast where we generally talk about two thematically linked films, a mainstream one and a cult one. In this case, we've got a special one-off episode for you, which we do sometimes. It is called Thankful and Hateful. That's right. It's Thanksgiving-y time while we're recording this. And so we like to do an episode where we tend to give thanks and give anger, aggravated frustration, all that stuff, because they go hand in hand, right? But I also don't like to brand these as a holiday thing because, you know, you can listen to it any time of year. We can bitch and moan any time of year and be thankful. You know, what? Anyway, I'm your host, film critic. I know. I'm your host. Can we tell we're all a little punch drunk here? We record multiple episodes in a row because we're efficient, but that also means that we're tired. So I'm your host, film critic and comedian Nate Wyckoff. I'm going to bring my best despite being half asleep. And we've got Tad Mastriani with us today. How are you doing, Tad?
I'm hungry.
Hungry. And Mandy Longley, how are you doing?
Good. I'm in a mood to complain about stuff.
Yes.
Let's go.
Awesome. So I think we should start with the thankful, because oftentimes we aren't as passionately passionate about the thankful section because we're already grateful for it. We don't necessarily need some sort of fix or have a gripe with it, as opposed to the hateful section where we can become infuriated. So what we're going to do is we're going to share what we're thankful for, and then we're going to give a movie or a show that somehow exemplifies that. All right, so I'll go first, break the ice. I'm thankful that the big studio system is breaking down once again. What I mean by that, they're never going to go away. But what I mean by that is that there are other filmmaking groups and distributors that are sort of filling in the gaps left by the studios who are making less and turning out less successful stories on average. For example, A24 is a really good example. Pretty much everyone who watches movies regularly has heard of A24 at this point. They tend to put out sort of art house horror films, although they are definitely branching into non-horror territory. That is their current goal. Normally, I would be like, but they actually have some good stuff going on. I will say this, they're doing, my understanding is that they're the ones producing the biopic of Elon Musk, which I am very much against because he's happy with it, which makes me unhappy, although it's early, early in pre-production. And get this, this is not even part of my hateful. This is just a side thing. Darren Aronofsky has agreed to make the film. If you cannot, now, this is, I haven't seen the film. Perhaps it is going to blow my mind in a very different way, but I cannot imagine that a movie, a biopic based off of the book that the person it's about wrote is going to show him in the shit covered light that he actually lives in the world. And I'm sorry. I am a big fan of most of Darren Aronofsky's work, even the stuff I don't like. I appreciate some of the risks he took. And for him to take this, seems, I don't know, is he okay? Can we do a wellness check? Is he living in his car? What happened, right? Like, what happened that has caused him to take this movie? Okay, that's beside. But A24 is great. For most of the films, I always step out to see their film. Even there are times when I don't like it. I think Talk to Me, which everybody seemed to love, I don't quite know why. It's actually, in my opinion, a bad film, but it has some promise. So maybe a sequel would be good. But A24 takes risks. They give money to people who a larger studio system, say Warner Brothers, would not be willing to fund. And they give us, because of that, movies like Bo is Afraid with Joaquin Phoenix, which is wild. They give us movies like Men, which we will absolutely talk about in this podcast, which has an ending that will baffle even the most experienced of literary critics. And yet it's powerful. It's really interesting stuff. So I appreciate that we're getting studios that have enough little money behind them to take these steps forward and put out what so many of us are actually hungry for, as opposed to yet another. I mean, I'm not saying it's not a good film. It has a great cast, so perhaps it is a good film, but I just don't even have the interest to see Gran Turismo. I know that it's based off a real story about people who play Gran Turismo, but and that's unfair to the people who actually did it, because I'm sure that it's a very interesting story. I don't want to see another video game movie right now. I don't. I don't want to see another video game TV show. And I love video games, but they're never as wild, as intense as I want them to be. They're never. They're trying to cross the boundary to a wider audience, and it's not good. Anyway, I'm thankful
to tell you, Nathan.
Yes.
But with the inevitable collapse of the MCU, you're going to, in the next few years, see the rise of the NCU, the Nintendo Cinematic Universe. I guarantee it. You're going to see it in the next few years, because I already see the framework being built.
Oh, they've already announced pre-production for the Legend of Zelda movie, the live-action Legend of Zelda.
And I heard it, and I don't give a shit.
They've already done, I mean, obviously, and Super Mario Brothers, unfortunately, I did not think was very good. It didn't work.
It was okay. It was cute.
They did all sorts of things that were just a bad decision. I actually was bored at one point. It was good. Here's the thing. It was fine.
Do younger people actually care about the Nintendo franchise with these specific titles that they're making movies about? Or are they supposed to be aimed at people our age? And like, both. We're also they're not really casting about them.
They're going to cast a wide net because that's what Nintendo does.
And that's, they tend to over sanitize their work. And I mean, so yes, and I agree. And like the Super Mario Brothers movie, though, it just, there were so many missed opportunities. Like you had Anya Taylor-Joy as Peach, and Peach barely, they're like, she's not the princess waiting to be rescued. Great. Can she have an actual arc? No. Okay.
No? Mm-hmm.
You have Jack Black as Bowser. Fantastic. Can you give him some actual screen time? No? Okay. How about instead you put in a framing story with a insanely weirdly stereotyped Italian family, which, by the way, you took out the Italian accent kind of because you didn't want to offend people. And then you put in this hackneyed scene from Saturday Night Fever without the grittiness of Mario and Luigi at the dinner table with their like Italian stereotype family.
Okay,
and
listen.
Then you listen, you have 10 minutes before they even go to the Mushroom Kingdom, 15, I think. And at one point, there's a whole section where they are attacked by a dog in someone's apartment, trying to hide in the shower while they're trying to plumb a toilet. That's Mario. That's Mario.
Nobody, Nathan, nobody in the, and I'm going to do the thing right now. Nobody in the history of the world with any heritage is offended by the whole bibbity bobbity thing.
No,
nobody.
No,
never.
Here's the thing. I love that you're talking with your hands.
Yes.
And in case anybody didn't know, Tad Mastriani is very Italian. So
yes.
I mean, here's the thing. It was just
okay.
It had so many opportunities, and I feel like it failed. It's good for 5-year-olds, which is not I'm not offending 5-year-old content. I'm saying that there was nothing for anyone older to grip onto or even chuckle at.
Yeah, even
except
my
11-year-old
song
was
like,
we saw that
okay
before the movie came out. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that
Nathan,
was disappointing.
I got an idea. Hold on. I got an idea. Mm-hmm. We can fix this. All right. We get Dennis Hopper to be Bowser. We cast some fat guy to be Mario, and we get John Leguizamo to be Luigi. Banger idea.
I wish something like that existed. And you know what they should do? They should actually instead, so they should turn Mushroom Kingdom into like a Blade Runner hellscape.
Yes.
Yes.
Absolute fucking dystopia with fire and jump boots and bombs.
You know what? Princess Peach should stab Yoshi because I think there's a tension between them that isn't fully explored in the mythos, and they need to do that. I wish Greg was here to talk about it. Greg is our resident Nintendo freak. So anyway, so I'm thankful that there are studios moving in to the big studio territory. Now, do I actually think the big studios are going to get their comeuppance for screwing over so many of us? Can Warner Brothers cancel another movie that I want to see? Can you do that? Can you take a movie that you've already made and shove it in a back room for me some more? At least Roger Corman had the good sense to have somebody leak the film, right? Yet I can't see Batgirl, you know, because they're like, we got to make $38 million in tax, you know, rebates or write-offs. I'm like, shut up. You are horrible. Anyway, and I love DC Comics. It's my whole deal. Okay. So I'm grateful that there are other production studios moving in who are doing more interesting projects. I don't think that the big systems are in any way going to suffer from this. I think they will have some minor aches and pains. And what they're going to do is then they're going to go, oh, we're going to distribute your movies. And because we have a wider distribution net. And what's going to happen is these companies that are producing these movies will say yes. They will say yes because they can't say no to that kind of money and exposure. And then as they have the money and exposure and contracts in place, Warner Brothers, just an example, everyone's going to do this, but they're going to say, okay, this project is great. We love it. We need to work on the portrayal of Nicaraguan guitar players. Okay. We're going to need to work on that. So, even though there's nothing to do with that and there's nothing about Nicaragua or guitar players in general in this movie, we're going to need to insinuate one of those characters in here. Right. So, and I'm being facetious, but that's what's going to happen. And what does that mean? It means that we will be back to this exact same system. The big distribution company, the big production company will be dictating content made by these smaller production houses. It's going to happen at some point, most likely, with most of all of them. You know, I think maybe something like A24 might survive because they're already getting big enough on their own. They're having success. But, you know, people with money have just more opportunity and more methods to insinuate themselves into whatever they want to make more money. And that's going to, you know, whatever. But anyway, I appreciate that right now we're getting a breakdown of that. You know, hopefully we can get to the point like we were in the 70s and 80s with Canon and Golem Globus and these little, frankly, often garbage production houses that just want content. And I'm not talking Netflix or Hulu or a streaming service that wants to produce a movie. I'm talking about companies that go out to make a movie. That's what they go out to do. They don't go out to get subscribers. So when they do that, even if it ends up being garbage 90% of the time, we will get garbage that has some uniqueness because people are behind it who want to make their movie, right? Even if it goes back to the whole idea of, you know, naked ladies on the back of a motorcycle and they make a motorcycle gang movie that's, you know, just Wild Angels, right? Or whatever, or Easy Rider. That's at least something that we haven't had in a long time. We need that infusion. And I'm grateful that I think we're getting some of that because people are seeing holes they can put their money into to get films made that are not something the studio's even going to bother looking at. Mandy, what are you thankful for? And I used A24 as an example. What are you thankful for, Mandy?
Okay, so kind of, I don't know. I'm like, I don't get to see that many films outside of the podcast because I'm very, very busy. But like, I get to the movie theater every once in a while, and I would say I am thankful that movie theaters are still in business, that they still exist, because that was not really a guaranteed thing after COVID. A lot of them struggled, and a lot fewer people are going to see films in person. I know that when I do actually go see a film in person, I'm usually the only one in the theater. And I'm like, how are they still open? This is wild. So I'm very grateful that that's still a thing. if I had more time to go see movies, I'd say I was also very thankful for the monthly subscription services that a lot of these theaters have. So you go watch as many films as you want, because films are, like, going to see them in the theater is getting to be, like, prohibitively expensive for a lot of folks, especially people who are fans who want to see, like, four or more movies in a month. You know, so it's really great to see that they're diversifying their business plans by having these like monthly subscriptions, as watch as much as you want kind of thing. So I someday maybe I'll get to participate in that. And then finally, I'd say really thankful this fall season for all of the book-based movies that are coming out that I'm a fangirl of, that are not Marvel Universe based. That'll be my gripe, as it will come up. Spoiler. I'll be hypocritical and say, like, oh, I would like more films. I'm grateful for all the films on the written content that I am a fan of, such as like the new Hunger Games film that's coming out, the new Dune film that's coming out. I did just binge watch All the Light You Cannot See That We Cannot See, that is on Netflix, which is based on an amazing novel with so much detail and heart to it. I highly recommend that as either watching the miniseries, because it's like 4 hours. It would have been like a really long movie, and they broke it down into four episodes. So I say, like, keep them coming, because this is a great season for film and TV shows that are based on really good books.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's totally true, and that's sort of the next step of the comic book boom in film. You know, is they're looking for other areas of content, like Tad said, video games, right, are already being done, and, you know, books have always been a big source, but I think we're getting more, because people love to say, for years now, they love to say print is dying in regards to books. The reality is that many books, especially like young adult titles or sci-fi fantasy titles that aren't, you know, hard sci-fi, those are actually have gone up a lot.
So great. There's so much good stuff coming out. I just read In the Lives of Puppets, which is...
That sounds awesome.
It's hilarious. I want to see that movie get made. It's like a juxtaposition or opposite retelling of the Pinocchio story, where there is one real boy and everybody else in the story, I was going to say the film, everyone else in the story is an android or like a puppet created by man at one point in time. You know, but now, like, in this story, there's only one live person, like, that exists. So it's very, very cool. Like opposite retelling, and the characters are all hilarious. Most of the characters have a parallel or like a tie-in to other very like popular pop culture icons, like Nurse Ratchet from One Flew Over Cuckoo's Nest. There is a character who's like a nurse android who is named after her and is very like sadistic-ish, but like in a loving way. They sort of like turn that one around a little. But it's just like, that one's super fun. I would love to see that movie made.
I'm sold already. Anything that has puppet, even in the title, I'm down to go for.
Yeah. So you should check that one out. I don't know. That's what I'm grateful for, is that they are still like, there are great books and they're still making movie and TV shows based on those books. And they're actually really well done. They do the source material justice with good production quality and cast lists and everything. So,
well, that is something a miniseries can succeed at that books often can't. I mean, that single movies off of books, you know. Yeah. I think of like Lemony Snicket's A Series of Unfortunate Events. You know, you had a great cast and some pretty good direction, but the script tried to cram 13 books or 12 books into one movie. Yeah, it's very ineffective.
Yeah.
You know, but that happens, and you know, we know why, but it's not a great choice. Tad, of course, asked to go first because he's very tired, and I said no. I actually put him last on this rung. Sorry, I forgot. Tad, what are you thankful for in film and TV right now? And what's an example that exemplifies that?
It's two sides of the same coin for me. Right now, I guess I can be thankful that the technology has gotten us to the point where now we have the opportunity to realize projects that would have never been possible over the past couple of decades. My understanding is that One Piece, the live action, is really good because the story is well done and the special effects are now good enough where you can kind of emulate what's in the anime.
Relatively inexpensively.
Yeah. On the flip side, because the technology has become so ubiquitous, we've seen examples of it becoming a crutch. So everyone complained about how CGI was sort of supplanting a lot of practical effects in a lot of films. And we saw that is indeed true. And even when people would say, oh, well, we're going to use more practical effects, it turns out that a lot of the people who used to be really, really good at that have retired and
passed away.
Exactly. Like, I was recently informed that the guy who did, and this doesn't have to do with CGI, but it's just an example of how the old guard really is fading away and probably never to be replaced. The man who did the Jaws poster recently passed away. Mm-hmm. And that's because I'm following Drew Struzan on Twitter. He's someone I've admired a long time because he's done almost every good movie poster over the past 30 years. He did all of the Star Wars novels covers. His artwork is fantastic, and it's the end of an era when he retired. And then the people around, you know, and adjacent to that are all going away, and it's getting harder and harder probably and more expensive to find people who can actually do the practical effects that when we were kids was relatively cheap. Like I was mentioning to my wife, I was watching one of the more recent Discovery dinosaur documentaries and looking at the special effects and going, Jurassic Park looked better than this. Mm-hmm. Jurassic Park, which came out in what, 1994,
and its recent anniversary, you know, theater run, Corinne went to see it, and I mean, it's still stunning.
Like, and there is nothing like those special effects,
and they you know, it's because they use CGI in a limited capacity to enhance what was there at most, right? And they built it. And we get, you know, I've talked, I think, at the pod at some point. I had recently had the pleasure to meet, as he was having an estate sale because he was moving, the now retired Greg Canham, an incredible multi Emmy award winning special effects artist. He did he was like a head designer on Bram Stoker's Dracula by Francis Ford Coppola, the Vice, the Dick Cheney satirical biopic, just an incredible and very nice guy. And he worked on tons of some Empire and Full Moon features as well. Really cool stuff. And he's, you know, he really is one of the last bastions of truly the technical advancement of physical special effects. And so we have people who are skilled. We have a lot of, you know, I follow a lot of really great people, Creature Workshop, things like that on Instagram and things. And they have some really cool, fun, amazing designs. I love them. They're not the same, right? Because this, you know, people like Greg Canham, like realism was important to what he did. And it's not supposed to always look fantastical. Even the fantastical films are supposed to look grounded in reality often. And so that kind of technical precision, I mean, going through, you know, lucky enough to he let us in to go through his house, seeing the racks and racks of teeth, you know, masks, I mean, the face masks, the things that were used, Dremeled, physically molded and done, just unbelievable. And we are moving to a point where people are going to have to rediscover that skill.
I think that's okay because you kind of have to. I mean, that's what drove the industry to that point, sure, right? With people who were absolutely willing to put the time and effort in to push that into the mainstream. The problem is that the mainstream used it. The mainstream eventually found something that was more cost effective. And it eventually got pushed out. And it ties back to what you were saying before is there are now holes to fill. Mm-hmm. So for anyone who's listening, if you are passionate about those things, stop acting like you need to learn those skills and develop those skills to try and get into that mainstream. Start thinking about your own projects and start trying to build something on your own, because that is really the only way forward at this point. The mainstream is going to continue down this road where they're going to either lean on CGI or they're going to start working towards AI, which will have its own issues. And if people are really looking for that visceral, realistic feel that old special effects could evoke, good luck. You're going to have to do it on your own. And it's going to be with your own time, your own money, and you're going to have to find a lot of people who are willing to support you on that. But guess what? You got to go build it on your own.
And the nice thing is, you know, yes, everything costs money, but, you know, to do a lot of those special effects, it's practice and technical skill. You could get everything you need. I could literally, I mean, it's too late now of the day, but I could go to the Michaels up the road from me and the craft supply store and get everything, literally everything you would need to make a professional, say, monster mask or special effects applique. You know, that kind of stuff is available. It's just the practice, precision, and skill, and the tips and tricks that one would learn through a lifetime of the craft that are you're, like Tad said, they're going to have to be rediscovered soon because they're just not there anymore. And interestingly enough, that made me think of Jim Henson Studios, which is a dream love of mine. You know, ever since, I mean, I was a kid and watching the Muppets with my parents, and just everything, whether or not you're Sesame Street, it's truly unbelievable. It's brought so much joy to the world. Truly incredible, incredible production company and studio by a sort of genius creative figure. I have to say, when the Five Nights at Freddy's movie came out very recently, I was disappointed when I first saw the trailer because they used 3D animated figures. I'm like, I know why they did it. It looks like the video game almost exactly. And I'm like, but I wish they would have actually, in this case, changed it a little bit to make it fit in the real world. And then I discovered that they are physical props made by the Jim Henson Studios company. That is how good it is. Now, of course, there's some 3D, you know, augmentation here and there, but that is how good it is. It is actually so good that it looks fake at this point in time with what we've seen over and over again with CGI. CGI has literally failed us in the way that we now, I literally, after seeing thousands upon thousands of movies, not even joking, I saw something that was good enough, specific enough, that I was like, it's CGI. I wish it wasn't. I wish it looked more real. And to find out that it is physically real, I'm like, it's not quite the parallel, but it's like an Uncanny Valley-esque moment where my whole perception is what's changed. And that perception, it's like an inverted Uncanny Valley, you know? The thing isn't so close to real that it feels uncomfortable because it's not quite there in some infinitesimal level. It's actually gone to the point where I no longer see what is real as real, because it is too exact compared to what I'm used to seeing. And that was a wild, wild moment. So it's a whole new world. We're gonna quickly move on because I know this is, you know, people don't have a lot of time this week. So we'll get right in there. I'm gonna go with what my hateful thing this week is. And it's very tied to my grateful moment, okay? The hateful moment. I am so sick and tired of movies not taking risks. I am sick and tired of it. It is so mind-numbingly boring to watch so many films. And here's an issue. I know a lot of people don't get to, like Mandy said, a lot of people don't get to watch a ton of movies, especially in the theater. And so it's not so bad when you just don't get to do it a lot. It's an experience, right? Even a bad movie is an experience. Here's the problem. It is moving from an art form, from a method of true intellectual and spiritual, I'm going to use that word, and emotional communication. And everybody say goodbye to Tad. It is moving from that to something that feels AI created. And guess what, folks? There are features from big studios that have already used AI and are already using AI. In fact, Warner Brothers, it was leaked that who knows the full truthfulness of this, because as we mentioned in another episode upcoming, people at the top of corporations tend to be the least technically capable, at which point they often say things or want to make decisions that are not based on reality. And so Warner Brothers had some internal communication about that they planned to use AI, exclusively AI, to determine which project to move forward for their slated projects going forward. Now, could it potentially be done? Yeah, well, you can ask ChatGPT to make a decision, but you need a lot of complicated programming and understanding and advanced algorithm, et cetera, blah, 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 blah. I'm not a designer. To do that effectively, where you would actually maybe have some sort of predictor of income. But that's the mindset. Okay, so that's what's going to move forward. Now, there is a film, at least one, that's already being made that is the quote unquote the first completely AI-generated script. You know, South Park had that brilliant moment where in one of their recent mini movies for Paramount Plus, where the entire end, or maybe it was a Comedy Central episode. Anyway, the entire ending of the episode to resolve it was written by AI, and they just animated and voiced the AI script.
Ridiculous.
Yeah. And it was insane. Like it was almost like a human wrote it, but you know, it's at best, it's like talking to Meta support for Facebook or Instagram. You know, they're even smart enough to make it seem like it's somebody in India or overseas at a call center when it's literally a bot. So that, you know, they're getting good at that, but we're moving away from those risks. I don't like that. I want more interesting things. Even if it fails, I want it to be interesting. I'm tired, and I am going to pick on James Wan here. I've been doing it lately because I've been watching through his filmography and it's problematic for me. As Tad said, go back to smaller projects. Okay. I think that a lot of the people in Hollywood, and I'm using Hollywood in general, in the studio system or being sold to the studio system, are quote unquote safe. Like, I'm tired of seeing a Conjuring film. Okay, because I know what's going to happen. It's a flat female character. It's got a scene where the male lead does something like strenuous, right, to win. And then it has a solution at the end where it's essentially people saying something they think is poignant or just looking off. That's it. That's the whole concept. And it's over and over again. It's safe. There's nothing new. There's nothing interesting. There's no risk. I never feel in the audience scared, worried, tense, elated. There's no emotional response. It is literally just me spending time not doing the rest of my life, and escapism in that sense is fine and dandy, but you can do more with that escapism. You can actually have a productive escapist experience that makes you feel something, become a better person, be scared about something that is happening, like AI. Okay, there's things that you can do, so there's not a need for garbage that has no soul to say something that is difficult to quantify. I don't like that. I'm tired of it. It's wasted energy. It's wasted energy across the board. So many people have to work on movies, even small productions, that when you see something like that, and it's hard not to be disappointed because so many people put their energy and life and love into that project, and it will not be appreciated because the end result is so deeply flawed that no one can really love it. People can say they like it, they won't love it. So that's what hurts me. And I continue to hope that we're getting away from that for at least a period. I do think it's cyclical and it will come back and forth. But Mandy, you're last up. What do you find hateful about film and TV right now?
Okay. I is probably an unpopular opinion, but I'm so sick of Marvel movies. So, like, and I guess, like, that could be extended. Like, I'm just feeling very hateful about the big movie industry tendency to, like, just milk every single franchise for every single minute of every single movie they can get. Like, they did it with, like, The Hobbit, like, book after Lord of the Rings was success. They're like, instead of, like, a cute little single one-off movie for The Hobbit, let's make it three stupid movies that have nothing to do with the book, like, you know, barely have anything to do with the book. Now they're like, let's make the Harry Potter final film two films. Like, let's make, I'm not a
Hunger
fan
Games two films,
yeah,
split
Hunger Games two films. Let's make Twilight, which I am not a fan of, like, let's make that last film like two films. And then now it's like the Marvel Universe franchise is like 1,000 movies at this point. I don't even know. Like, but every time I do have time to go to the movies and want to go to the movies, there's like one or two Marvel films like out taking up space of something else that could be more interesting and more like different to go and watch versus like, oh, it's yet another like Marvel Universe film that is happening for some reason. They're just, I know it's probably unpopular. There's obviously like a ton of people that are super into those films and very happy that they keep making them, but like, I'm over it.
They're doing a lot less well. Right.
Yeah.
And you got, they keep saying, why is this happening? Right. Oh, well, they're rehashing the same thing, blah, blah, blah. There's something to be said for saturation. People get tired seeing some of the same things over and over again. And
but also, it's like, I mean, I have gone with friends who are more into the Marvel Universe and, or like tried to watch like some of the movies, and you're just missing so much context if you haven't watched the other 30 films.
It's like jumping into half of season four of like episode four in season four of a series that you know nothing about.
Right. So it's just like, it's great, but like you're taking up precious time on the schedule of like these theaters.
And they cost a lot of money. And gets me is a lot of, and here's the thing, I love comic books. I love a huge number of the Marvel films. Mm-hmm. I have been disappointed by the last few for sure. And I will say the caveat is go see the Marvels. It's a very fun movie, everyone. Support it. It's a wonderful female lead cast. It's a lot of fun. It's not a deep movie, but neither does it have to be a deep movie. But even I don't, as I said, seeing Ant-Man 3, Ant-Man and Wasp and Quantumania, I was talking to my wife and I was just like, this is the first time I don't think I'm going to go see the next Marvel movie. Mm-hmm. Now, of course, I did because it was one I actually had some vested interest in, the Marvels, but I'm no longer interested because they weren't taking risks. And that's something that I often criticize, and even on this pod, which has, well, that Marvel movies don't take risks. And because of that, I'm never tense. I never have any sort of emotional connection with them. Once a character leaves that is an actor I like, then who cares, right? I no longer have the invested interest because I was frankly more invested in that person than I am the film and the character. That's why I preferred Zack Snyder's DC Universe. It was dark. It was, it didn't have to be dark, but it was a lot. And there were tense moments. It was what I think of as a blockbuster. It was an intense experience to see those movies. And I'm very sad that Warner Brothers, you know, essentially, not even essentially, ousted Zack Snyder. And I love James Gunn. I've talked about him so much on this podcast. And the fact that he's co-head of DCU Films, it should elate me. But it doesn't. And I was like, why am I so not happy about this? Like, I'm not so that I'm not that I'm disappointed. I'm like, because I'm tired of it. I'm tired of Marvel not changing anything. And I'm tired of Warner Brothers with DC Comics changing every two movies because they everything is a failure. Like to them, like, it's just nothing, you know, I can't, it's like Ben Affleck said this about Justice League. Because, you know, he played Batman in the Snyderverse. I personally think that he was the best Batman. There are people who are on my side and there are many who are detractors. That's fine. But he said of Zack Snyder, of the Zack Snyder cut, which went from a like 2-hour movie to a 4-hour film. He said, the amazing thing about that is that he took my worst reviewed movie of my career and made it the best reviewed movie of my career. That is what can happen when you have someone and people involved in a movie that care about it, have a vision, and they want to put it forward. And Zack Snyder outlined since then what his plans were for the DC Universe, and they were very different from the comics. And yet, when you hit it right and you engage people, even fanboys, not all of them, some just want to be angry, especially Star Wars fans, but they will follow. And it will become a new canon. For example, Harley Quinn was not from the comic books. She was not in the Batman comic books. She was created by Paul Dini or is it Alan? Anyway, for the cartoon, and was so popular because she's a fun character. They brought her into the comics. That's how a vision that is really, they care about what they do as a creator and they want to put it forth in a way that brings them satisfaction. That's how you can get those really great moments. And you can't do that when you refuse to commit or when you refuse to change and you try and recapture that same lightning in a bottle. You lose it. I'm also mad because, for example, Star Wars, they pushed Marvel's, Disney pushed Marvel's cinematic universe to the point where they were putting out so much content that it got sloppier and it got poorly reviewed. And then they start doing that thing that that Warner Brothers does, and they panic cancel and panic reshoot, and everything becomes this homogenized project that's totally driven by audience feedback and screenings, and it's not very good. And I'm mad because that happened with Star Wars to a lesser extent, because you got Solo, a Star Wars movie, which we all enjoyed, frankly, and that was considered a flop. Okay, which, by the way, Ron Howard finished that movie. He's a very good established director, and with a big name behind him, and because of that, they ditched all this content. And it wasn't until The Mandalorian came back, which came out, which is still having trouble breaking into new Star Wars content, right? Before they did that, it was stagnated. And by the way, guess who's directed a lot of The Mandalorian? Bryce Dallas Howard, Ron Howard's daughter, who is an amazing, beautiful, awesome actress and director. I love her. So you get these people, and why? Why did a project that was somewhat similar in tone, Solo, and something like Mandalorian, which I think was fantastic, etc., why did one fail and the other didn't? Okay. And why then did one change the course of a franchise's development and the other hasn't, really, even though it's successful, right? It's very frustrating, because we know these companies, just like our own employers outside of the industry, if you work somewhere else, they're looking at the money and they don't have a strong connection to the content, to the actual, the feet on the ground, the people who, whose goal it is to stylize a film, to write a script. They don't have that connection, right? Maybe there are some that do and they get excited, but oftentimes, especially late in production, you don't have that anymore. They start looking at things that are like, oh no, this is a problem. This is a problem. This is a problem. This audience didn't like it. The audience here had something different to say, cut, add, whatever. And it becomes a huge mess. And then they use that as a reason to not pursue something. And instead they want to start over, or they want to dig up yet another older property and try and revitalize it. And I'm not against bringing back older properties. We're millennials. I live in nostalgia, right? We don't have anything else. but it's so obvious from the outside when you look in that it's hard to understand and have sympathy for those inside the machine of, the large production houses, to see in there and be like, I get it. I understand your pressure, because we can see the problem. We're the consumers, and not everyone sitting in a focus group theater can voice that effectively. So why are we using that as the driving force? By the way, a lot of other countries who make films do not do that. They do not have multiple focus screenings and then do recuts and edits and editions. Yeah. They don't do that. The idea is that the filmmaker made the film.
It makes a film.
And they put it out.
They put the film
England
out.
Is very much like that, for example. Yeah. And it leads to that homogenization, the neutering of content. And if something is going to fail because of X, Y, and Z, maybe it's going to fail because it's offensive. Okay. Let it fail. Right.
Yep.
That's sort of the whole idea. Yep. Like, you can't fire someone for being, for believing in something horrible, like a racist agenda. Mm-hmm. You can't fire them for that. You can fire them if their actions affect somebody else, but you can't hurt them for their mind. Right.
Yeah.
But people cannot like them. We cannot like them. We cannot talk to them. That's the repercussions of being a bad person, per se. So the reality is if you make a product that isn't good and hurts people, the outcome isn't, I'm going to change this whole franchise, I'm going to erase you from history. The answer is that we will say, sorry, don't like you. Not going to go see your movie. Not going to go see your stand-up, X, Y, and Z, right? So it's there's this misunderstanding, I think, in a lot of the big studios or any big company, that they can control these small things. And when they do that, maybe they eliminate some risk of a big bomb or something that they have to PR cover, cover their ends, but they also miss out on the huge successes. And you're going to have more successes than you're going to have catastrophic failures. Maybe you'll have more failures than successes, but the catastrophic ones that actually affect you in the long term, they're not going to be as many as the big successes that people remember you for. So I wish that would go through. And it's very obvious for so many of us who are consumers, but it's in an insular world of big corporations like production houses that are huge, just doesn't read. They don't get it yet. And so we'll see if that ever changes. But well, that's been Thankful and Hateful, our yearly roundup of what we are appreciative for in film and movies in the contemporary time and what we are hateful about. And I hope you guys have enjoyed this. Please catch up with us next week. We have a fantastic double feature that we'll be talking about called Animals Behaving Badly. And it is very exciting. Two 2023 films, which, we have one of the most extreme consensuses between all of the panelists on one movie, our next episode. So make sure you catch it next week, every Tuesday at 5 a.m. Also follow us on the YouTube.com/cultandclassicfilm. Subscribe. We offer our new episodes on video every Tuesday and a classic episode on video every Thursday. So you get twice the episodes from us you can watch on Cult and Classic Films YouTube channel. You can also go to our website, Cult and Classic Films, but please go to Patreon, check it out, get exclusive movies that are only available in special collector's editions and high definition forms from us. And you can get them very inexpensively by subscribing monthly via Patreon. We'll send them right to your door. And you can also just subscribe for a couple of dollars a month to support us and get access to a heavily discounted store. So you can buy the releases as you choose at a big discount. Okay. Check that out. Helps us. Plus, you'll get some really cool stuff. Things you've never seen before or can't get anywhere else. All right. Thank you all. Please catch us next week. And to play us out, as always, is The Chud with All About Evil. Hey everyone, thanks for listening to Cult and Classic Podcast. This podcast is important to me, but what's more important are the rights, privileges, and freedom from violence of everyone in this country and in this world. And that means supporting Black Lives Matter. If you'd like to make a donation, please go ahead and visit cultandclassicpodcast.com, where we have a list of places you can donate and help out. And please stay safe.